Thank you for joining us on In Focus, presented by 107.7 The Wolf. I'm John Dampschroeder, and my guest today is Jeff Finkel, President and Chief Executive Officer of the International Economic Development Council. Jeff is a proud graduate of Ohio University, where he's very active with the Voinovich School for Leadership and Public Affairs. And of course, Jeff, leadership and public affairs for elected officials like former Governor George Victor Voinovich normally comes down to prosperity. And as Jim Rhodes used to declare while pulling his wallet from his pants pocket, the issue in this election is whether you're putting money in the wallet or taking money out of the wallet. So, Jeff, let's start by discussing what the International Economic Development Council does that helps political leaders put dollars in those voter wallets. How do you help create prosperity?
Well, at the end of the day, what we are is we are the membership group for people who practice this thing called economic development. So Jobs Ohio in Ohio, they are active members. The city departments of development in Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, my hometown of Newark, Athens, Ohio, are members of this organization. We probably have 500-600 members in the state of Ohio. We're all trying to create, expand, and develop jobs and create tax base in the communities where they work. It's all about growing prosperity.
How do you keep everybody kind of working together as opposed to pulling apart? I know when I worked in economic development with Governor Voinovich, basically there are so many organizations in Ohio that it's hard to get them all lined up working together.
Well, you know, and there are times when you do want people working together. But not working together does not necessarily mean you're working at cross purposes. First, every community has their own targets of opportunity. You know, let's take my hometown of Newark again. You know, in 1960, it was the lawnmower capital of the world. There were more lawnmowers made in Newark, Ohio, than there were any place else. Today, zero. Akron, Ohio used to be the passenger tire capital of the world. Today, zero were made. But at those times, they would have been trying to find suppliers and original manufacturers of, in Newark's case, lawnmowers, in Akron's place, tires. And today, at least in Akron's case, they still want to be involved in this, in the general business of component manufacturing, and they still have some headquarters of the tire industry remaining there. So, you know, the place is over in Ada, Ohio. It's known for making footballs that the NFL uses every year. With that diversity, you know, those places are not interested in the same things that might go into New York City or Chicago or Tampa, Florida, or, you know, Newark, California, for Christ's sakes. But there's a variety of different strategies that people are trying to implement.
How important are incentive programs across the board?
So the incentives, I think, do create some problems for our industry. Let's first start with economic development as defined is an interesting definition. Because when we look at the activities of economic developers, less than a third of economic development activities is about big game hunting, or trying to chase that, you know, new shiny object and getting it to locate in your community. But the problem with chasing that shiny object is everybody, the person, that the company that is making that decision, they think they're worth a lot to everybody. Some of those companies shake down communities in big ways, and they want, you know, gazillions of dollars in tax breaks and other and incentives. So, you know, both elected officials, chambers of commerce, and some economic developers think that that's what's necessary to make those deals work. I will tell you, and I'm sure you know this, the number one issue right now is who has talent. Talent is far more important than financial incentives. If you were a company that was going to locate someplace and you needed lots of welders, if you're a community with lots of welders, guess what? If you were going to write any check for incentives, it can be substantially smaller than those places that have to train a lot of people to actually meet the needs of that particular company.
Well, Adam, go ahead.
Don't, by all means.
As you point out, we're in an era where the biggest economic constraint is the inability to find people to take the jobs that could be created. Have you seen anybody that's especially effective with a development program designed to pull people to a location so that they have the workforce available to fuel the growth?
Well, I'm going to answer that in a couple different ways. I jokingly say when I give presentations around the country that economic developers didn't even know how to spell the word workforce 15 years ago. That wasn't what economic developers had to do. Today, the fastest growing job in our profession is somebody who has a title of talent attraction, talent liaison, workforce programs, something. Now, economic developers don't do workforce training, but community colleges do. There are a lot of private sector entities that do workforce preparation. And those economic development organizations that understand what companies need when they come to town have a workforce platform that they can build off of. They're going to be in better shape than those communities that don't have one.
You know, you see so much about special zones, enterprise zones, hub zones, and now Congress has created an opportunity zone program, latest special tax incentives for investment in government-targeted locations. Do these work?
That's a good question. It kind of depends. Now, I worked in the Reagan administration, and we were arguing for enterprise zones. And we never got enterprise zones passed while Ronald Reagan was president. Bill Clinton came in behind us and were after the Bush administration, and they passed empowerment zones, enterprise communities. And it was not the same thing quite that opportunity zones are. But the question is, and it's the same question as this whole business of incentives. If the incentive is big enough, and these are tax breaks effectively, if they're big enough and if they are targeting the right things, some of it will stick, and companies will locate in places that they may not have been naturally attracted to. But frankly, the incentive needs to be sizable enough that it draws investment to places that they otherwise wouldn't move them. One of the other zones, by the way, that is a big deal right now, and this is the first I've ever seen it, is foreign trade zones. Now, they've been around, as you know, for a long, long time. The reason that they are much more important now is because of all these international trade wars that we're having. If you run something through a foreign trade zone, some of the tariffs get removed. And so a number of places are looking at foreign trade zones in a way that they haven't done ever.
Oh, very interesting. I had Economic Development Council consultant, Bill Fruth on this program, and he said the single most important asset for a community seeking new economic development is land available to develop. How do you see that?
Well, and it kind of depends on where you are. But right now, if we went to southeastern Ohio, they are site poor, meaning that they don't have serviceable sites to take on new manufacturing, new logistics centers, new office space. And so Jobs Ohio is having to retool some of their programs so they can help send some jobs into Southeastern Ohio, as if they have jobs to send, but to at least make those places more competitive. Columbus, on the other hand, it has plenty of sites. You've lived in Columbus. I've lived in Columbus. You know, all of those old parking lots between downtown and 71, there were a lot more of them when I was living in Columbus than there are today, but those are sites ready to be developed. In those cases, it's a matter of price. But depending upon the community, yes, sites can be very important. One of the things, Ohio has been pretty successful at taking brownfields and remediating them and turning them into new locations for businesses. So there's plenty of land out there. There's plenty of sites out there. Sometimes it's a matter of price. It's a matter of cleaning them up. It's a matter of getting some servicing to them to allow them to go forward.
You know, the Wall Street Journal recently wrote, once manufacturing departs from a country's shores, engineering and production know-how leave as well, and innovation ultimately follows. They say it's become increasingly clear that manufacture there also means innovate there. Do you agree with that assessment, Jeff?
You know, I'm not confident that that's not partially or mostly correct. I have been very concerned about the loss of manufacturing, what we call outsourcing or offshoring. And we've watched it for a long time, but the last 20, 25 years have been particularly devastating. You know, I grew up in Central Ohio, and many of the people that went to high school with me, they left school and they immediately walked into a factory. And that factory, with their high school degree, paid them well enough that they could go, they could put kids through high school or through college. They could buy a car. They could buy themselves a house. I'm not as confident today with that. Many of the jobs are able to do that because many companies are pushing the manufacturing offshore. And in many cases, they are sending other facilities offshore as well. We've got some real hard work over the foreseeable future to either grow new lines of business here in the United States or hold on to more of our jobs in one way or another.
You know, Toledo was once very well represented on the Fortune 500 with headquarters, but that's changed over the years with mergers and acquisitions and the so-called creative destruction of capitalism. Can a place like Toledo still realistically hope to have corporate headquarters, given that the airport is pretty weak on direct flights to global business centers?
Well, you know, unfortunately, Cincinnati's weak on direct flights as well after Delta reduced the hub status of the greater Cincinnati airport. I'd never rule out communities from reinventing themselves. So I'm not here to say that Cincinnati can be written off, or Toledo is, or for that matter as well. But what I think is important, and this, if we look around Ohio, the advantage we had for the longest time was local ownership. If you looked at Cleveland, if you looked at Toledo, if you looked at Akron, you could find people whose last name was on many of those corporate headquarters. I mean, Rockefeller started his career in Cleveland. We look at, some of the other families who owned a variety of different businesses. What unfortunately happens is the original family gives up the business because they can't grow it to a size, and it does get acquired, and oftentimes those headquarters moved. What pained me a great deal is when NCR ended up moving out of Dayton. And there was a sizable incentive package that Georgia and Atlanta put together. But, you know, we have to fight to keep those types of facilities staying in places like Ohio.
Well, on the other side of the coin from weak air service, Toledo's in between Detroit and Cincinnati on I-75 and Chicago and Cleveland and on I-90. So it's the sort of place the rapidly growing logistics and distribution aspect of the economy finds real efficient, and the sort of place where a regional sales executive is a half day away from huge markets north, south, east, and west. How important is it to think back from the relative advantages that a location has and build a development plan around those advantages?
Well, I mean, that's all what Michael Porter was talking about in his books on comparative advantage, competitive advantage. You have to look at what you have and figure out what do you do better than anybody else, or at least what do you do better than anybody else in a circumference of a location. Now, you know, part of it may be you have some unique educational skills. You know, I talked about Newark, Ohio a little bit ago and the fact that it was the lawnmower capital of the world. Well, today, golf component manufacturing is certainly far more important than lawnmowers these days. And the funny thing about that is once you get a niche, other companies may grow there. Other entrepreneurs may might rise up. Training is shared among existing companies. And it's not big enough that it's going to go to Cleveland, but it's helpful to that local economy. You know, Columbus is sitting in a similar position as you talk about Toledo in terms of logistics. There are trucking companies everywhere, and they have both the former defense air base there that is essentially a freight air base now, and you have a major airport. Those things all help with the notion of hiring people, growing logistics, multimodal transportations of sorts.
You know, you're talking about Rickenbacker Air Cargo Park, and I remember years and years and years when that was described as Folk's folly. County Commissioner Jack Folk believed that that needed to be turned in when the Air Force pulled out, that was a great resource. And it took so many years, Jeff. How important is it to have someone with vision and perseverance on to execute on some of these big opportunities out there?
Absolutely essential. And not only was it Jack Folk, who I actually happen to know quite well a number of years ago, the former city development director of Columbus, Bruce Miller, went out to make that thing happen. And you've got to remember, when you're working with the federal government, as Bruce was trying to pull that project off, the Department of Defense had a hard time releasing land. And the first buildings were actually not built on the former military land. He had to buy farmland, and the first buildings were actually off base, but now it's quite a success story. Wilmington hopefully will be a similar success story as well. But you had a huge asset, and these runways are not cheap. They're not some of the buildings are not cheap, and can you have endurance, patience, wisdom, foresight, and figure out a way to go forward? Certainly Franklin County, Columbus did that in a big way.
You know, historically, there's been great support for economic development, but we're seeing polling now that, in fact, you mentioned Michael Porter, and he has just come out with a study that indicates that there's great and growing hostility to business and to government, with many people, especially young people, convinced that the government is working for the interests that fund their campaigns rather than the benefit of society as a whole. Do you think that the collapse in trust in the leadership class is an economic development issue?
You know, I've not thought of it that way. I do see that some of the tax breaks that have passed here in Washington over the last few years is forcing people to take sides. And I can see that if the rich are getting richer and the poor are getting poorer, which there seems to be some class differential in some of these incentives that Washington is setting out, could create a storyline that is not good for our economy generally.
What should economic developers be doing to address that and keep the broad support that's required to have the sustainability once again? And, you know, going back to Folks Folly, you know, when these things become controversial, people shoot at it and it's hard to sustain the vision.
Yeah, I don't think we should get in the middle of the Washington debate on tax policy or, you know, if somebody's getting richer. But it over the last few years, it has been very clear to many of us that work in this economic development profession that there has been a class of people that have not benefited from this boom economy that we're supposedly in. There are still a lot of jobs at the bottom. There are a lot of people that lost their homes in the recession. There are a number of people that are still trying to work their way up. It used to be the mantra in economic development that we needed to focus on high-wage jobs that paid benefits, and that's where we needed to focus our activities on. It has become apparent to me that while we shouldn't give up on that, we also need to focus on to make sure that we're looking at diversity in employers, making sure that we're taking opportunities to find jobs for people who may not have great skills, but they can work in a factory, a call center, something, and work their way up, and to be a part of the American dream, because we certainly don't want it to become the American nightmare.
You're an Ohio University graduate, and as I mentioned at the top of the program, you're involved with the Voinovich School at OU. So as a guy with some Athens ties, how important to that community would you say Joe Burrow's Heisman Trophy acceptance speech, indicating that he was accepting the award for the kids of Athens and the people of Southeast Ohio? How important is that to Southeast Ohio's development prospects?
Is that amazing story or what? As you probably know, and he talked more specifically about people that don't have enough food in southeastern Ohio, the Athens Food Bank has now raised over $430,000, but through social media as a result of Joe Burrow's talking about that. You know, many communities have a local hero, and that local hero can bring some attention and can help a region through some good times and some bad times. And if Joe Burrows continues to help southeastern Ohio, I just think that is great. You know, if he goes into the NFL, which he obviously will, I mean, he's going to, if he's really good, he'll have a 15-year career, and then, you know, he'll live off of his legacy after that. And, but, you know, will he move back to Athens, Ohio? Who knows? But I just think that is a great story for today. Hopefully it's a great story for the next 15 years. And you know, at some point you and I will drive into Athens and we'll see a sign, "Welcome to Athens, the home of Joe Burrow."
I'm sure that'll happen. You know, speaking of, I've always thought every second waitress at Bob Evans knows when the Ohio State football program has a bad game plan. Everybody knows what it takes to win at football. There aren't 10 people who are deeply competent at economic development strategies. And so, Jeff, let's close this. What are the aspects of high-performing economic development organizations. How can people kind of get themselves up to speed and figure out whether their community and the organizations that make up the economic development organization in their community are really performing at a level they need to be?
Well, I would look at it in three ways. First, do they have an entrepreneurial leader, staff director, CEO, that actually knows what they're doing and has some type of track record that people can talk about? Second, is that organization benchmarking themselves against other strong organizations, and how do they stack up? And third, does the local government and the business community trust the organization well enough that they put money behind it to allow it to succeed? Each and every one of those is a separate report card in its own right, but collectively, if you're able to check off those three things, it seems to me that you're on your way to having some growth. And that growth will depend upon what type of community you're in. And if you're in Cambridge, Ohio, you're going to need to compare yourself against other communities, similar size, similar location. But with those three ingredients, you ought to be doing better than your benchmark communities. If you're Columbus, you're going to be looking at yourself, almost on a national level, and how are you doing? But it seems to me those are the three most important and critical essentials for success.
Jeff Finkel, President and Chief Executive Officer of the International Economic Development Council, thank you so much for joining us today on In Focus. I'm sure that anyone listening to this on the radio or on our website at 1077 The Wolf will understand economic development and the factors that create prosperity in our community much better because you were able and willing to spend this time with us today.
Thank you very much.